You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
It is the 11th of September 2019, 18 years after that fateful day in New York City, which brought America to its knees and started a new era in the way the world dealt with terror. Let's take a moment to remember all those lives that were lost and have been lost since because of the innumerable wars and conflicts that have followed. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and today we will be taking a look at all the stories of this particular day from not just India, but across the world. You're listening to Stories of the Day right here on Money Control.
You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Bloomberg has reported that the government's plans to expand its corporate bond market are running up against a year-long credit crisis in another obstacle for Prime Minister Modi's efforts to jumpstart a sputtering economy. Sales of rupee bonds rated below AAA have halved so far this year to $9.7 billion as a wave of debt defaults and a funding crunch in the shadow banking sector, that is the NBFCs, have made investors reluctant to buy riskier notes. Banks, who are major players in the primary market, are now mostly interested in providing backing for sales of quasi-sovereign and top-rated issuers, this according to data compiled by Bloomberg. The big news from the tech world and indeed the business world is that Apple has new iPhones. They were announced yesterday evening at the Steve Jobs Theater. The new iPhones retain the fundamental design language of the predecessors, but have got a lot going on, including computational photography, night mode, and some benchmark-breaking under-the-hood upgrades. In addition to them, Apple also announced a bunch of services that will be available along with older iPhones as well. Now, the gaming subscription service, Apple Arcade, will cost about $5 a month and offers unlimited access to over 100 exclusive games. The subscription-based video streaming service, Apple TV Plus, which costs about $4.99 a month in America and about 100 rupees a month here in India, is also coming up. Now, the new models, iPhone 11 Pro, iPhone 11 Pro Max, will start at 99,900 rupees. And if you want the 11 Pro Max, you'll have to shell out 1,09,900 rupees. And the lowest cost variant within iPhone 11 will cost you about 64,900 rupees. Now, Apple has kept the price lower than its predecessor iPhone XR, which is about 76,990 rupees, which was the highest selling handset from last year's crop of iPhones with 47 million global shipments after it hit stores in quarter four 2018. It also meant that a certain group of people with anxieties are also tripping because of the many holes that you see on the back of the iPhone. All of these cameras has triggered anxieties in them because there is a specific kind of phobia called trypophobia, which is being scared of a cluster of holes, as you would see in, let's say, a lotus stem. And now the back of the iPhone looks a bit like that, and people with trypophobia are tripping across the world. Infosys has seen an ongoing decline in its share of employees below the age of 30. And this is partly on account of weaker top-line growth and partly as a result of hiring more experienced staff. At almost 420,000 employees, that's about 4.2 lakh employees, TCS has the largest workforce of all listed companies in India. It has employed the largest number of women as well, 1.5 lakh female employees, accounting for about 36% of their workforce. India has agreed to reduce import duties on Indonesian-produced palm oil to 45%, bringing about parity with imports from Malaysia. This decision was taken at a meeting between Commerce and Industry Minister Piyush Goyal and his Indonesian counterpart Enggar Tiasto Lukota on the sidelines of the 51st ASEAN Economic Ministers meeting in Bangkok. In response, Indonesia has offered market access for India to export raw sugar by lowering the standard requirement for imported refined crystal sugar to a level that the country could find possible to meet. Amazon India has a new office and it is massive. 49 elevators moving a floor per second and Zumba classes for its more than 15,000 employees. These are some of the highlights of Amazon's new Indian headquarters in Hyderabad. Its biggest building globally, by the way, and it also matches its ambitions in a vast but challenging market. This says AFP. The US retail giant launched its first site in India in 2013 and is locked in a fierce battle with Walmart, which bought a 77% share, as we know, in Flipkart. While the prospects of success in the vast nation are tantalizing to Amazon, the risks are also high. But it should tell you of the scale of dreams that Amazon has for the country, going by the building in Hyderabad. Blackstone Group will purchase the remaining 50% stake in Indiabulls Real Estate's commercial properties for over 4,420 crore rupees. This, according to a report by the Economic Times. The two companies have signed a term sheet for the commercial portfolio, Indiabulls told ET, without mentioning the value of the deal. In March of last year, Blackstone acquired a 50% stake in IBREL's commercial properties for 4,750 crore rupees. The portfolio included One Indiabulls and Indiabulls Finance Center in Mumbai's central area of Lower Parel. Money Control has not been able to independently verify the news. In other pieces of business-related news from the country, an Inmobi product has raised 330 crore rupees from Peter Thiel's company. Nitin Gadkari hopes that vehicle scrapping policy will come out soon. In a move that could come as a bit intriguing, Gujarat has decided to scrap traffic violation of fees, fines to less than 90% of what it used to be. Yes Bank shares, meanwhile, have jumped over 14% after ex-CEO Rana Kapoor's stake sale comment. After Jio, Airtel has launched 1 Gbps Extreme Fiber. And in another piece of news that I found rather interesting, Chennai is most prone to cyber attacks among Indian metros, according to one study. Netizens down south, including Chennai, Bangalore and Hyderabad, are way more prone. The K7 Computing Cyber Threat Monitor report released today found that almost 1 in 3 users in the country encountered cyber attacks between April to June of 2019, Chennai recording the highest at 48%, and that was followed by Kolkata, 41%. Among other metros, Delhi registered the lowest percentile of cyber attacks with 28%. All right, business news done. In other news coming out of the country, former Chief Minister of Andhra Pradesh, N. Chandrababu Naidu, and his son, N. Lokesh, on Wednesday today were placed under house arrest in Vijayawada just as they were about to leave to lead a rally to Atmakur in Guntur to protest against alleged attacks by YSRCP workers against TDP workers. This according to a report by the Indian Express. Andhra Pradesh Director General of Police D. Gautam Savang issued a statement through the Chief Minister's office that Naidu was taken into preventive custody as, quote, his actions are increasing tensions and creating disturbance to law and order in the Palnadu region of Guntur district, unquote. Krishna District Police locked the gates of Naidu's residence at Undavalli and did not allow his convoy to move out of the house. Lokesh, who tried to leave in another vehicle, was also detained and sent back into the house. Speaking to reporters outside his residence, Naidu said that in the last 100 days, there were more than 500 incidents of attacks against TDP workers. He said, and I quote, "This government is violating human rights and fundamental rights. This government has failed to protect its people." At least 125 people belonging to SC, ST, minorities have fled from Atmakur fearing attacks by YSRCP workers. There are women and children among those who fled. Today, it is very unfortunate how the government has reacted to Chalo Atmakur. Unquote. Former Union Minister P. Chidambaram today moved the Delhi High Court for bail in the INX media case. His counsel also challenged the trial court order, remanding him to 14 days judicial custody in the case till the 19th of September. The 73-year-old Congress leader was arrested by the CBI on the 21st of August in the alleged corruption case. Earlier today, Chidambaram, who is in Tihar jail, expressed concern over the state of the economy and questioned the government on its plan to bring the country out of this decline and gloom. The former finance minister also lauded the capacity of the poor people to distinguish between justice and injustice. On Monday, Chidambaram asked his family to post a message from him on Twitter. He urged authorities not to arrest officers who were involved in giving clearances to INX Media when he was finance minister, saying none of them had done anything wrong. United Nations chief has refused to interfere on the Kashmir issue and has asked India and Pakistan to resolve the issue through dialogue. These remarks came after the UN spokesperson was asked whether Antonio Guterres planned to mediate between the two countries on Kashmir during the UN General Assembly session later this month that would be attended by both Prime Minister Modi as well as Pakistan Prime Minister Imran Khan. As of now, Guterres says, "I'm not going to involve myself." Pramod Kumar Mishra has replaced Nrupendra Mishra as the Prime Minister's long-serving aide who resigned on the 30th of August after a five-year stint as the top bureaucrat in the central government. So, PK Sinha is now principal advisor. Former IAS officer P.K. Mishra has been appointed in this new role, and Mishra has replaced Nrupendra Mishra. The Mishra, it's a Mishra replacement facility in the PMO. Mishra is, of course, this new one, a 1972 batch IAS officer, various work experiences, management of programs relating to agriculture, disaster management, power sector, infrastructure, so on and so forth. As additional principal secretary to the PM in the first Modi administration, Mishra was credited with introducing innovation and transformative changes in human resource management. He holds a PhD in economics from the University of Sussex, by the way. India news done. Let's hop across to international waters and find out what is happening there. Hong Kong has made a $37 billion bid for the London Stock Exchange. This has come as a huge surprise. It's about £30 billion or about $37 billion. Hong Kong Exchanges and Clearing, that is HKXCF, said today it had made a proposal to the board of the LSE to combine the two companies in a cash and share deal worth about £30 billion. The deal, they said, would redefine global capital markets for decades to come. It would reinforce, of course, Hong Kong's position as the key connection between mainland China, Asia, and the rest of the world. The announcement comes on the heels of LSE's $22 billion deal to acquire financial data company Refinitiv. That deal was, of course, aimed at transforming the London Stock Exchange into a global markets and information juggernaut to rival Michael Bloomberg's financial data empire. Shares in the LSE spiked as much as 11% on the news of Hong Kong's offer before trimming those gains slightly. In a statement, the LSE described the offer as unsolicited, preliminary, and highly conditional. And what about financial markets? Well, US stock futures are indicating very little change at Wall Street open after mixed market action in recent days. The Dow is currently on a five-day winning streak, which has been its longest since early June, but the Nasdaq is riding a three-day losing streak. The S&P 500 has been up in four of the past 5 days, but has moved less than a point in each of the past two sessions. All of this, of course, comes before policy-setting meetings at the European Central Bank tomorrow and the Fed, of course, next week. Hopping across to the United Kingdom, for months, there has been a rather simple mantra in the bond market: what goes up keeps on going up. Anxious investors have driven sovereign bond prices to a series of huge highs as they've looked for a safe place for their money. That move has pushed bond yields to record lows. As a result, many European governments have been able to borrow at negative interest rates, with investors even willing to pay Berlin for the privilege of buying Germany's 30-year debt, as I'm sure you've seen Donald Trump tweet ad nauseum about it. But of course, no trend lasts forever. And this week, bond prices have started to turn south, and that means they're pushing bond yields higher. Overnight, the yields on the US's 2-year and 10-year bonds have hit one-month highs, bouncing back from their lowest levels since 2016. That move means prices are falling, which means weaker demand. So The Guardian asks the question, what exactly is going on? The optimistic view is that investors are growing less anxious and are turning their money out of bonds into other assets, which could give a better rate of return. With a no-deal Brexit on the 31st of October looking unlikely and fresh US-China trade talks imminent, the global economy could perk up, and that would make low-yielding bonds look less attractive. From Britain to Europe, Europe's regret over its lack of big internet technology companies has been addressed with the listing of a $100 billion consumer internet company today in Amsterdam. That company is called Prosus. I don't know if you've heard of it, and it is a spin-off of South African consumer internet conglomerate Naspers. That I'm sure you've heard of. Prosus said its market capitalization on its first day of trading is roughly $100 billion, making it one of the 10 biggest consumer internet groups in the world. Prosus is not a consumer internet business itself, meaning it doesn't offer digital services under its own brands like a Facebook or an Alibaba. Instead, what it does is it invests in a portfolio of global internet firms in sectors from payments and fintech to food delivery, etc. The group's best-known investment is a 31% stake in Chinese tech giant Tencent, a gaming titan and owner of the hugely popular messaging app WeChat in China. Naspers made a $32 million investment in Tencent in 2001, a bet which is now worth $130 billion. The addition of Prosus to the Amsterdam exchange shakes up Europe's tech landscape, with the company instantly becoming one of its biggest tech entities in the region. According to data compiled by Reuters, it is only outmatched in size by German software firm SAP, which is valued at roughly $135 billion. There may be some respite in the US-China trade war, but considering it's been going on for a year now, there have been some effects and blowbacks. Some American companies in China are actually speeding up their exit from the mainland as increasing tariffs continue to hurt their businesses. This, according to a survey released by the American Chamber of Commerce in Shanghai. More than a quarter of the respondents said that in the past year, they have redirected investments originally planned for China to other regions, which is an increase of 6.9 percentage points from last year. Technology, hardware, software and services industries had the highest level of changes in investment destination. This research was conducted recently between June 27th and the 25th of July, during the period when Trump and Xi Jinping agreed to resume talks and before the latest escalation in retaliatory tariffs. US firms in the mainland also said restrictions to accessing the local market have made it difficult for them to carry out their business. This we've seen even with cases like when Apple said a portion of their manufacturing will actually be moved from China to other places, including Vietnam and India, etc. Meanwhile, China's Ministry of Finance has announced plans to exempt 16 types of US products from additional tariffs today, including food for livestock, cancer drugs, and lubricants. This exemption, which is scheduled to go into effect from the 17th of September, will be valid for a year through to September 16th of next year. The list contains items like cancer drugs, feed, solvents, and lubricants. In a roundup of other big international business headlines, Credit Suisse has poached top Deutsche Bank analyst. Kinder Lakhani is the latest high-profile figure to leave the German lender amid a radical revamp. We know that Deutsche Bank is laying off as many as 16,000 people, and this is continuing in that direction. The dress that made Zara a sensation over the course of the summer, I don't know if you've seen it, there is this polka dot dress which suits all body types and became a sort of summer dress sensation, has resulted in this Spanish fashion group that is Zara to 5% rise in like-for-like sales. California, meanwhile, has passed a labor bill in a blow to Uber and Lyft. This law would make it hard to prove workers are contractors and not employees. All right, business news done. Let's start things off with politics and other pieces of news coming from the rest of the world. We start things off with, as usual, America and Trump news. John Bolton was a national security advisor, happens to be the third one in Donald Trump's presidency. The first one was Flynn, who was, of course, let go because of his controversial role in the Russia story. Then there was H.R. McMaster, and then there was John Bolton. Very famously hawkish, meaning all he likes to do is go to war. And it almost seemed certain that Iran was next on his plate. Except Donald Trump and him did not see eye to eye on several issues. As Stephen Colbert went on to say earlier, the pettiness of Donald Trump has resulted in the exit of a truly hawkish warmonger. So that might just be good that the president is so stupid. The announcement that John Bolton was being pushed out of his role as national security advisor seemed like a shock, but not to people within the White House, because it apparently had seemed apparent to them that the two of them had been at loggerheads for a long time. Now, this morning when Donald Trump announced that he has thought about it and considered letting go of John Bolton, he said so in some tweet, and then John Bolton replied to that tweet saying, "I spoke to Donald Trump yesterday and I told him that I wanted to resign, and he said we'll talk about it tomorrow." So it's basically a case of I fired you, except he is saying, the other one is saying, "No, you didn't fire me, I resigned myself," etc. But all said and done, the hawkish John Bolton is now out of the White House. Meanwhile, the 2018 election cycle has finally come to an end, because there was a congressional seat in North Carolina that was lying vacant, and the Republican who contested from there, who was famous for his bathroom bill, meaning this bill said that people who identify themselves as male or female, doesn't matter, whatever is there on the birth certificate is the bathroom they're supposed to be using. It's been widely seen as an anti-LGBTQ measure. Now, this man, Dan Bishop, has now gone on to win this congressional seat, and that is a victory for Donald Trump. But that is not exactly where troubles end for Donald Trump, because a recent poll has suggested that his approval rating in the United States is at an abysmal 38%. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said he will move to annex parts of the West Bank if he happens to win the re-election next week. His announcement sparked criticism from both the Palestinians as well as the United Nations. There were also warnings that it could be a fatal blow to efforts to reach a two-state solution between Israelis and Palestinians. The West Bank was captured from Jordan by Israel in the Six-Day War back in 1967. Now, it has been regarded for decades as Palestinian territory, and most of the international community regards it as being under Israeli occupation, with all settlements built there considered illegal, although Israel thinks they're not illegal. And now Netanyahu is campaigning on the promise that he will in fact move to annex parts of the West Bank if he wins re-election next week. And he says he has the support of Trump in this. If you thought switching from normal cigarettes to e-cigarettes was a healthier alternative, well, think again. There is concern now about the safety and regulation of e-cigarettes after the death of a sixth person in the United States from vaping-related lung disease. The woman who died was older than 50 and had a history of health problems. She became seriously ill right after she started using e-cigarettes, and her symptoms progressed rapidly. The Center for Disease Control, that is the CDC, FDA, and state health departments are now investigating these deaths, but so far no clear link has been established. The FDA only this week warned e-cigarette maker Juul, which is headquartered near where I am in San Francisco, about illegally marketing its product as a safer alternative to cigarettes. Turns out it may not necessarily be so. In British news, three Scottish appeal court judges have declared British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's decision to suspend Parliament, or proroguing, in the run-up to the October Brexit deadline as unlawful, overturning an earlier ruling that the courts did not have the power to interfere in the Prime Minister's political decision to prorogue Parliament. Lawyers acting for 75 opposition MPs and peers argued Johnson's decision to suspend Parliament for 5 weeks was illegal and in breach of the Constitution, as it was designed to stifle parliamentary debate and action on Brexit. The judges failed to issue an interdict or injunction ordering the UK government to reconvene Parliament, prompting a row over whether the decision meant MPs could go back to the House of Commons. In more UK news, something that didn't happen when I was there, when I was in the UK in around the 2012 time, Theresa May, who was then Home Secretary, made one of her big decisions, which was to abolish the 2-year work visa for students after graduating. And now the UK has done a U-turn. Some good news coming out of the UK in that international students will now be able to stay in the United Kingdom for 2 years after graduating to find work under the new proposals announced by Bojo, that is Boris Johnson. The changes, due to come into effect for those starting courses next year, would help those studying in Britain to begin their careers in the UK. A lot of the people wanting to study in the UK had been deterred by this particular move, that the UK wouldn't allow you right after you graduated, you left shop. But now you can actually stay there for 2 years on a post-study work visa to find work and hopefully even settle there. Iraq will immediately comply with OPEC production cuts after months of overproduction, its oil minister has said today. The second largest crude producer in the 14-member organization is often labeled OPEC's problem child for chronically overproducing, even as the group tries to curb output during a time of low oil prices. The big tech news today, of course, is the release of the new iPhones, but there's something else going on. It's called a Joker. And no, it's not Joaquin Phoenix earning great praise for his role as Joker in the new Joker backstory that you must all see, apparently, because it's fantastic. But this is a new malware called the Joker and is now plaguing Android apps. And apparently it can steal money from your account by presenting itself as a premium subscription. The malware, named after the Batman villain Joker, has infected 24 apps on the Google Play Store, and which have now been removed. According to one analyst, the malware was downloaded and installed by over 4,72,000 Android users. Though the infected apps have now been removed, it is unclear how many users are still at risk. Which are these apps? A quick look at them. Some of them: Advocate Wallpaper, Age Face, Alter Message, Antivirus Security, Beach Camera, Collate Face Scanner, Cute Camera, Dazzle Wallpaper, Sobe Camera, Spark Wallpaper, etc., etc. Most of these apps have infected users in countries including India. From those very serious pieces of news to something a little more frivolous, except I think it's extremely serious. Indians apparently love to get high on weed. This, according to a new study by the German data firm ABCD. In 2018, India's two biggest cities, that is New Delhi and Mumbai, consumed 38.2 tons and 32.4 tons of marijuana, among the highest in the world. Delhi ranked third in the list of 120 cities by consumption of weed, behind New York and Karachi. Mumbai came in at sixth. So that basically means Delhi consumes more weed than Los Angeles, and Mumbai consumes more weed than London. Which are the top 10 cities by weed consumption as of last year? Well, New York, Karachi, New Delhi, Los Angeles, Cairo, Mumbai, London, Chicago, Moscow, and Toronto. And where do you find the cheapest weed, if you want to know? Well, Quito in Ecuador, Bogota, Asunción, all of them in South America, Jakarta, Panama City, Johannesburg, Montevideo, Astana, Antwerp, and the 10th top city with the cheapest weed, New Delhi.
You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
And on that high note, I take your leave for the day. It is 11th of September, and those were the stories that you absolutely had to know from just not just the country, but from around the world. I'll, of course, see you first thing in the morning tomorrow with a morning walk down Dalal Street. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
And finally, a word on our subscription product. Money Control Pro offers curated market data, stock analysis, and trading recommendations. You can now subscribe to Money Control Pro for just 289 rupees for a year as part of our independence offer. Use the code FREEDOM, FREEDOM. The offer is valid until the 31st of August for Android and desktop users. You can log on to moneycontrol.com to subscribe.
This has been today's Editor's Pick. And you've been listening to Money Control.